Okay, everybody. Sorry. Thank you for your patience. We had a little technical problem, but here we are. I'm Howie Hawkins. I was the Green Party candidate and the Socialist Party candidate for president in 2020. And this podcast, Green Socialist Notes, is about continuing to educate and organize around the eco-socialist program that Angela Walker and I ran on. And today we have a special guest, Claire Cohen, who's a child psychiatrist in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She's a member of National Single Payer, Physicians for a National Health Program, the Western Pennsylvania Coalition for Single Payer Healthcare. She's a Green Party member on the steering committee of the Green Party of Pennsylvania. And I've known Claire since 1992 when we both supported Ron Daniels, who ran an independent presidential campaign attempting to take the Rainbow Coalition energy and momentum out of the Democratic Party and into an independent political movement. So welcome, Claire. And before you say a few words, I just want to introduce the topic, you know, the need for a national health service. There was a significant article in The Nation, and we'll put this in the chat, by David Himmelstein, Steffi Wohlhandler, Adam Gaffney, Don McCann, and John Guyman, that was last March 31st. And they're basically saying we have to move from advocating Medicare for all socialized insurance to socializing the whole medical system, from a national health insurance program to a national health service, which we campaigned for during the campaign. And they're saying communities, not corporations, should own our, you know, vital healthcare assets. And they point out that in the past, most doctors were self-employed. Most hospitals were freestanding, not-for-profit, and for-profit medical entities were the exception. But now private health insurance has been joined by a whole new layer of corporate middlemen who are asserting control over healthcare delivery. Wall Street is buying up doctors, hospitals, and the other healthcare institutions, and they're subordinating care to profit. So today, most doctors are employees of large corporations or so-called nonprofit medical entities that act just like for-profit companies because of the competition for income. They basically become subsidiaries of corporate enterprises. And an example of this that they point out is the nonprofit Mayo Clinic. Everybody's heard of that. Their CEO urged their doctors to prioritize care for patients with the best paying insurance. So they're maximizing income instead of maximizing care. And so replacing private insurers with a single payer public health insurance plan is necessary, but not sufficient, they argue. A national health insurance plan would still funnel payments to corporate owners. And rather than to the people in the facilities, the doctors and nurses and so forth, that care for the patients. And the control would now be delegated to profit-seeking corporations who have little involvement in providing care. Now, this argument's been going on a while. Back in the 1970s, we had three models of healthcare reform. One was the Nixon model, which basically was private subsidies for private insurance. That's what we got with Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And then Ted Kennedy had a national health insurance, Medicare for all kind of plan. But Ron Dellums had a national health service plan. And, you know, that came out really of the civil rights movement. The Medical Committee for Human Rights basically helped him write that bill. They were the doctors in the civil rights movement. And they patched up people when they got beat up by police. And they did the same in the anti-Vietnam War movement. There was an article back then by John Ehrenreich and Oliver Fine that called the national health insurance proposal that Kennedy was proposing the Great Leap Sideways, because you now have the public instead of individuals through their insurance companies paying, and the for-profit entities, which even at that time were beginning to grow, just eating out of the public trough and raising costs. And the other thing this National Health Service in the Dellums proposal and what we advocated in our campaign had was community control. So you would have locally elected health boards, and they would have a say in how the healthcare was admitted and be able to deal with things like the inequity in where clinics are located, how people have access. So the underserved communities could speak up for themselves. So that's basically the argument we have for a National Health Service. And I think that article in the Nation kind of signaled a change in the movement. You know, national health insurance is not enough. We need a fully socialized system. So this is something Claire has been advocating. So Claire, why don't you take it from there and talk about this issue?
Sure. I've been involved with a number of groups that have been fighting for, we're now calling healthcare justice for some time now. And you already mentioned the groups I was involved with. And there's other groups too, besides National Single Payer, Physicians for National Health Program on the national level, Western PA Coalition for Single Payer Healthcare on local level. DSA has a Medicare for All steering committee. And there's something called the Medicare for All Roundtable, which includes the labor campaign for single payer healthcare. So not all these groups have moved to the idea that we may need at this point more of a national health service, but definitely national single payer has. We actually invited, after they wrote their article, Steffi and David to come and meet with us and talk about the idea of National Health Service. And people have read your piece, Howie, and we immediately recognized that Dr. Margaret Flowers, who was on National Single Payer, had some input into it. So what I think is important for people to understand is there's a fundamental conflict between privatized healthcare, the privatization of healthcare, and providing good quality healthcare for everybody who lives in this land that doesn't break the bank, that prohibitively expensive. In fact, that it's basically free at the point. That's free at the point of service. And what I mean by free at the point of service is you go to the doctor, you don't feel well, or you have a problem for whatever reason. You go to the doctor, or you go to the nurse, or you go to whatever provider that you need, hearing specialist, and you don't have to worry about can you pay. You get your care. So it's not the society pays for it. So that's why it's called free at the point of service, because when you need the care, you go get it and you don't have to worry, oh, do I have the money? Right now, I was just listening to something this morning, and a lot of Americans don't realize one of the fundamental indicators of the health care, of the health status of a society is the lifespan. Okay. And the lifespan of Americans has actually been falling. Our lifespan right now is 6 years shorter than the other OECD countries. That's the other 25 to 30 so-called wealthy countries in the world. Our lifespan in America is shorter than the lifespan in Cuba. People need to hear that. We right now, the lifespan for the average American is shorter than the lifespan in Cuba. So, and why is that? It's because we have a health system which is increasingly, its purpose is to help people, a small group of people, get rich, rather than seeing that the society, Americans, are healthy. And so we've been fighting on two tracks. One is we've been fighting for a single payer, or and eventually a national healthcare system, But we've had to fight on another track because not only is our system a mishmash of privatization, but it's actually getting worse. It's actually private equity firms. You were talking about private insurance, but let me just start way back. So when Medicare was first formed, the reason why it has some of the faults in it that it has is that when Medicare was first implemented under the Johnson administration, even though he believed we needed some kind of coverage, universal coverage, at least for people over 65, even then he didn't believe he was under pressure to make the system so that in the future, at that point, private corporations could have some role. Okay. And that's why our system, because a single payer system doesn't have to have copays. It doesn't have to have premiums. And in fact, a true single payer system wouldn't have any of those. And it should cover everything medically. So why didn't our Medicare cover everything? And why did it from the get-go have premiums? Originally, they were very small and small copay and have some gaps in coverage. That was a Faustian bargain with the private corporations so they wouldn't fight the implication of Medicare to begin with. And that's why Medicare had these copays and premiums and didn't cover dental and vision and so on. Now, also, if you go back and look at the legislation implementing Medicare from the beginning, there were certain oddities in the legislation, which in theory would enable private corporations to gain more of a foothold. And in the beginning, they didn't. But more legislation kept being added through the Reagan administration and the Carter administration to make it easier and easier for private corporations to play a role, private insurance, until 2003, when George Bush became president, when he finally sealed the deal and started the program called Medicare Advantage. And Medicare Advantage is just private insurance companies being placed directly. Those of you who are on Medicare, like I am, you get this book every year. And in that book, it tells you that there's Medicare A, B, C, and D. And basically, Medicare C is not really Medicare. It's basically private insurance companies that you can sign up with to get care that is in network, has all the faults of regular private insurance. It has copays, it has premiums, and the copays and premiums are going up. They're increasing dramatically. The way that private insurance is situated into what was the Medicare program is such that it's actually draining the private program and going to totally drain it. And this is by plan. The plan is to totally destroy the publicized part of Medicare till there's no more public Medicare by 2030. Okay. By 2030, there'll be no more Medicare at all. And the idea with doing that is that it'll be a model for getting rid of any kind of public medical program in the whole United States. The VA, there's efforts to privatize that, the Indian Health Service, to just lock in privatization into healthcare and make it excruciatingly difficult to change that and to develop a public system like single payer healthcare or a national health service. So 2003, when Medicare Advantage started, the deal with insurance companies, with private insurance companies, was this: public Medicare is so efficient, so cost efficient, that every dollar that goes into public Medicare 98 cents of every dollar goes to direct patient care. So when you pay your in your people who are working, you pay that FICA tax, which includes Social Security and Medicare. When you pay that, the part of that goes to the Social Security, part of that goes to what's called the Medicare Trust Fund. The part that goes to the Medicare Trust Fund, traditional public Medicare, not Medicare Advantage, 98 cents of every dollar of that money goes directly to treating people for their health needs. It's directly patient care. The deal that was made with Medicare Advantage was corporations was that they would not, that they could keep and that only 85 cents of every dollar of the Medicare Trust Fund that they got would go to patient care. They could keep 15% for whatever they wanted. And a lot of that is kept for profit. So that's one of the ways that Medicare Advantage right there makes Medicare less efficient and starts to privatize it, because right away you're cutting the amount of money that goes for patient care. And the way that it works is that it's through capitation. These companies, they're given a set amount of money out of the Medicare Trust Fund every year for every patient that they have to, quote, to do what they want to provide patients with care. And out of that set amount of money, they keep 15% for themselves, and they only use 85% to treat patients. So that's how it's work. That's called capitation. And out of that capitation, only 85%, not 98%, is used for patient care. On top of that, the insurance companies convince CMS, that's the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, to develop a system called coding. And coding is for every illness you have, for every condition you have, it has a code. Okay. But medicine is not cut and dried, and it's not straightforward. So they convinced CMS, well, for more serious illnesses, we should get a bigger amount of money. So this is what happened. So I have hypertension, but I have controlled hypertension. And this is literally what happens. When I go to the doctor, the controlled hypertension has a code that is reimbursed a lower amount. Okay. But if I had uncontrolled hypertension, the insurance companies would be reimbursed a higher amount. So their capitation would be higher. Does that make sense to people? So these insurance companies have created something called upcoding, which is fraudulent coding to get higher amounts of capitation, higher amounts of money per patient. And they've been so successful at doing this so-called upcoding that the Inspector General's office has now discovered that Medicare Advantage programs have defrauded the trust fund of anywhere from $12 to $25 billion a year. So every year for the past decade, they've been defrauding Medicare of $12 to $25 billion by doing this upcoding. Now, private equity firms have been looking at what's been going on, and they've been seeing how Medicare Advantage insurance companies have been making a killing. They've been quite successful, quite profitable, and they wanted to get on the act, because actually, only for a long time, only about 30-40% of Medicare beneficiaries, senior citizens, were signing up for the Medicare Advantage as opposed to traditional Medicare. So these private equity firms were trying to figure out, how can we get everybody, every senior, into this system so we can get some of that profit? Because we're talking about $90-100 billion worth of money sitting there that these greedy cats could grab if they could figure out how to grab it. So during the Trump administration, they developed a program called direct contracting, which would, instead of seniors signing up for Medicare Advantage, you sign up for Medicare Advantage versus traditional, you would be automatically, without your knowledge or consent, put in to a private insurance, a private program. And it didn't even have to be insurance. It could be anything, just a regular private equity firm. You automatically put in with a private equity firm as your middleman managing your health care. And you may say, how could they do this? Well, what they do is they get doctors to sign up. They now have these corporations. Oak Street. I'm trying to think of some of the names. Village Doctor. And doctors are put into these programs. And then your patients, that doctor's patients, without the patient's notification, are automatically signed up into these private programs. Now, under Trump, they agreed that these programs could, they didn't have to spend 85 cents of every dollar on your healthcare. They only have to spend 60 cents of every dollar. So they can take even more profit. Now, to be honest with you, no company so far has managed to get it down to only spending 60 cents of every dollar. There are some companies have managed to get it down to 75 cents of every dollar spent on patient care. But still, compared to 98 cents spent on patient care. And once again, the whole idea would be using that upcoding to increase the amount of profit that these companies could get, their CEOs and shareholders could get, riding off of the back of so-called patient care. The other thing that the Inspector General's office noticed was that the insurance companies, the Medicare Advantage insurance companies, when patients are really seriously ill, some of these companies, some of the biggest, have been finding ways to dump patients so that they're forced to try to go back on traditional Medicare. And there's some complications that make it hard to go back to traditional Medicare if you've been in Medicare Advantage. So it's been hard to get the figures, but there have been patients that have literally died behind this whole scheme where they have some rare cancer or they have a severe stroke or massive heart attack. Now there's no way the companies can make money. So now they dump you and you have to try to get back on regular Medicare at a time in your life when you're trying to fight for your life. So, what people need to realize is the system has been bad, but it's getting worse. And the whole idea, we've been privy to a lot of the information going on between Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services and these private corporations. And the whole idea is that eventually all medical care in the U.S. or Medicaid or non-medical care, whatever you want to really call it, will be under the auspices of these private equity firms who will not only bilk and drain and destroy the Medicare Trust Fund, but get rid of the VA and the funds for that and the National Health Service. And by the way, Medicaid has already been privatized. And there have been a number of studies. The Commonwealth Fund looked at all the studies done looking at the privatization. All but two states have totally privatized Medicaid. And what all these studies have shown is that patients have been getting poor quality care, and states have been paying more money for Medicaid patients than the two state programs. One of them's Connecticut that still have public Medicaid. So the whole system is being totally savaged for profit. And the question for us is, how do we fight it? What do we do? And we've been trying to fight it by mobilizing people, by getting information out there for people to be aware, one of the strategies that National Single Payer has been using is we've started getting all these little municipalities around the nation to pass resolutions saying they want the government to do single payer health care. We haven't yet gotten them to say they want a national health service, but single payer healthcare and some of these have been conservative municipalities and counties. that we've gotten them to pass resolutions. We don't use Medicare for All in those cases. We just say a national single payer nonprofit public system that gives everybody health care free at the point of service. And people, Dunn County, Wisconsin, we had to pass a resolution. There's a resolution in a county in Illinois and one down south. And so we're working on building momentum. And we use these resolutions partly to educate people because a lot of people don't really understand what's going on. And we've also been putting some pressure on certain so-called progressive Congress people. But I'm going to be honest with you, Howie. I think that this battle is really not going to be won until we have socialism in this country, because these private equity firms are fighting back hard. And they have the resources, money, and monies to fight. And many of these Congress people are bought and sold. These Democrats, not just Republicans, Democrats are bought and sold in terms of their viewpoint of how to do healthcare in this country. So I'll stop here and maybe have questions. Hopefully I was clear on what I was saying.
Yeah, we have some questions coming up. I'm a little more optimistic. I don't think we have to have a full socialist transition, because a lot of countries have public health care plans that are capitalist countries. It's not that hard a pull. The problem is the damn Democratic Party is bought lock, stock, and barrel by the health insurance providers and the Wall Street. So, you know, this privatization, like, for example, you mentioned that the goal is to have all Medicare, people on Medicare in privatized plans by 2030.
Yes.
That's the goal of Liz Fowler, mm-hmm. who's an insurance executive who Obama brought in to write the Affordable Care Act. Then she went back to the insurance company. Now Biden brought her back in for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. Mm-hmm. So I saw some people in the chat saying, you know, damn the Republicans. We got to damn the Democrats, too, because they're as much a part of this as the Republicans. We've had four states now where Democrats said, well, if you get us control of both chambers of the legislature and the governorship, we'll get you single payer.
Yeah.
It's Hawaii, California, New York, and Vermont. And every time they got the power, they didn't do it. They suddenly, the insurance money talked louder than the voters.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's just another reason for the Green Party. Yeah.
And a lot of people need to be aware that Biden has said that even if Congress passed passed legislation, even if both houses passed legislation for a single payer system, he would veto it. And when he was saying during his campaign, when he was saying nothing will fundamentally change, he was mainly talking to the health insurance, medical, big for profit hospital chains, big pharma lobbyists. That was who he was mainly talking to. And those are have they funded the most? Who has gotten the largest amount of money from those lobbyists? Biden, they have him in their back pocket. So he's not going to fight for a national public system like we're talking about. He's not going to fight for single payer, let alone a national health system, because he's bought and sold. So the answer isn't don't let the Republicans in, because as you've pointed out, many of the Democrats, the big medical industrial complex, the private insurance industry, the big for-profit hospital chains and big pharma, most of the monies they're giving are not to Republicans, it's to Democrats.
And that's down ballot, Congress, the House, the Senate, and state legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, using the New York example, the Democrats very explicitly said, get us control of the state Senate and we'll get you single payer. They got control in 2018. The single payer law had been passed, or bill had been passed by the assembly many times since 1992. Once the Democrats also got control of the Senate, now they have a veto-proof majority in both chambers. the bill has not got out of committee. And you look at who what happened? A lot of private insurance money, this private equity money that's investing in the medical field, and the drug companies poured money into the, you know, state Democratic candidates, the state Democratic committee. And they didn't need to buy off the Republicans because ideologically they're already there. They spent it on Democrats and they bought them.
Another thing I would like to say, part of the problem with the state-by-state approach, you hear a lot of people saying we could do like Canada and have a state-by-state approach, and that's an approach, because a lot of people have gotten so frustrated trying to fight for a national program that they're fighting state-by-state. And the movement is sort of divided on this. There are some that think who really have bought into the state-by-state approach, but Canada's system is a little bit different from ours. So just because going state province by province, their equivalent of states is province, was successful, does not mean it would be successful for us. Part of the problem we have, let's say that somehow New York, state of Washington, Hawaii, and California all got, did manage to get a single payer, state single payer system. There is nothing that would guarantee that Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas would ever get national, would then proceed to do national, a state single payer program, or a, because if you look historically in the United States, when we have gotten progressive programs in a few progressive states, that did not, and even when they were successful, that did not sway these conservative run state legislatures to turn around and then implement those programs. They hardened their stand. And in fact, that's one of the issues for Medicaid was, and for the ACA with all its flaws, was that they still are 11 state holdouts who refuse to take money for helping patients pay for ACA and refuse to take Medicare to cover patients, to extend Medicaid to cover patients. They're not going to do it. They don't care about those health statistics. These rabid right-wing legislatures in those states, they're not going to do it. And so a lot of the people who don't have health coverage, a disproportionate of people who don't have health coverage are in those 11 states. So it is not a given that by passing something in a state that all other states are going to say, oh, this is wonderful, let us do it too. That is not going to happen in the United States. And there's other things besides healthcare I could use to show how segregation, getting rid of slavery, just because some states got rid of slavery didn't mean there were other states that just said, oh, this looks so good, let us do it too. In the United States, we're going to have to make it a national battle. It's some national battle to be successful, because part of the problems with the states' rights thing, the voting act and so on, is you have a lot of on the local level, and this is a problem. This is a fault with people on the left. We've tended to oftentimes not pay attention to the fact how often on the local level, on these state levels, there's a lot of rabid reactionary stuff going on in state legislatures, guarantee that not all the states are going to come along. So I just wanted to put that out there for people who are saying, oh, if we can just do state by state, it's not going to be any easier.
And that's the subject of an article by Claire that we posted at the beginning of the chat that appeared in Common Greens on why, you know, at best, if some of the states do single payer, we'll get a two-tier healthcare system in this country. And the reactionaries in the conservative states, they don't care, because they're not about making sure people get healthcare. They're about getting paid by the, you know, the capitalists that back them. So look at that. Also, if we haven't put in the chat, put that article from The Nation that I talked about at the beginning. I really urge people to read that. I think that's a good summary of why, as they put it, national health insurance is necessary but not sufficient. Now we got to go to a full national health service.
Yeah. And I would like to say something about that. A lot of people don't realize that doctors less and less have autonomy and more are ruled by these big corporate entities who determine, who actually micromanage doctors' decisions and care. There, I can tell you some horror stories, not only in my own field, but National Single Payer, we're having a doctor come to talk to us someday soon about his horror story experience and how he tried to fight back. And but there's a lot of instances where doctors' decisions that they make are not what they wanted to make, but what their corporate bosses. I call it the proletarianization of medicine, where before doctors had a lot of autonomies, as you said earlier, they hung out their shingles and they determined. Nowadays, a lot of doctors, a lot of young doctors coming out of medical school are a quarter million dollars in debt or more. And I'm not making that up. They're $250,000, $300,000 in debt. And they got to look at how they're going to pay their malpractice insurance, which is a lot of money. And if depending on what kind of doctor they are, how they're going to pay for their office equipment. So a lot of times, just so they can stay afloat, they will sign themselves up with these big, they're now called ACOs. So they pay all the doctor's bills so the doctor can set up practice and not go broke. But now the doctor has a boss. And the boss is a money-making privatized entity, an ACO, a private equity firm that wants to make money. And that's their bottom line. And so if the doctor wants to stay in that organization, they have to do things like only take no longer than 10 minutes to see a patient. This happened in Indiana, Pennsylvania, where a doctor was told, you can't see a patient in more than 10 minutes. Don't do certain tests. Don't do this. Don't give certain diagnosis or give certain diagnosis that will bring more codes that will bring more money in. So I was just reading an article today talking about how a lot of hospitals are closing pediatric units now. Why? Because pediatric units don't, treating children is not as profitable as treating adults. So a lot of places are closing their pediatric units and clinics and pediatric ICUs because they don't make as much money.
Okay, let's get some of the questions we've had in the chat. I'll just add one statistic for people to think about. There was a study found that 338,000 of the COVID deaths have been because the I'm going to turn this off. 338,000 of the COVID deaths would have been avoided if we'd had a universal public health care system. So, this is a life or death issue, I guess is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So we had a question coming up there a minute ago from, there we go. Eric Gray asks, how do we make the case for National Health Service to those in the South? You want to start with that, Claire?
I'm going to try. So I think this is one of the things our movement has been trying to figure out. How do we do that outreach? How do we make that case? Because one of the problems is having outreach to people. One of the things has been, can we do it through unions? Unfortunately, there's not much in terms of the South is largely not unionized. And unfortunately, many of the unions, there are some unions that are for single payer or even a national health service, but too many aren't because nowadays that's how they're raising detras that they're providing people with public health care, not public, privatized health care. I think one of the things is we have to find ways to get the knowledge and information out to people about the effectiveness of publicized healthcare in other countries, the differences in our healthcare indices, why they're so poor compared to other developed countries. And we just have to, through churches, through talking to people, through organizations, through door knocking, through as many things as possible, street drama, get the message out there. If you're in an organization that's fighting for housing, that's fighting for decent wages, that's fighting for reproductive justice, bring up this issue, and this is what we're trying to do, of healthcare, and help people see how it's connected and just as important, and how all these things are connected in terms of people. You can't work if you're sick. If you have exorbitant health bills, you can't pay your rent or your mortgage. And certainly poor women have had a hard time getting reproductive justice even before Roe v. Wade was gutted and destroyed. And one of the things that would help is if people had access to health care. So I think the how do we make the case is every way we can. We talk to people, we advocate in our unions. If you're in a union, bring it up, advocate it. If you're in a church, bring it up, advocate it. We have lots of resources, the groups of us that are doing this, that you can use. When I go to a doctor, I go someplace and someone's complaining about their health care or having to pay a bill, I always bring up, do you know this? Do you know that this isn't a problem in other developed countries and even in some poor countries? And do you know there's a better way? So I think we really have to just do that organizing and that educating work in many different venues in any way we can.
And I think we can make the case to the people in the ways Claire's talking about. I think the problem in the South is we have institutionalized white minority, that is to say Republican rule, through racist gerrymandering and laws that are aimed at suppressing particularly the Black vote, but also the youth vote, generally the more progressive vote. And until we address that, the South is going to be ruled by this reactionary minority, which brings us back to the federal level. We've had Democrats having small majorities in both houses, and because of the filibuster in the Senate, they couldn't get laws to protect voting rights passed when the Republicans are passing voter suppression laws. And now the Republicans are passing laws to outright steal elections, and they couldn't get election protection laws passed, because it seemed it was a higher priority. Other things were a higher priority than voting rights for the Democrats at the national level. And again, for me, that's why we need Greens challenging them, particularly on the pro-democracy issues like this, as well as healthcare and militarism and the whole gamut, Green New Deal, all our issues. But the democracy issues coming to the forefront, particularly if the Republicans take back the House and Senate, or one of them, in this midterm coming up. And that's always been the case in the South. I mean, the damn Dixiecrats had veto power over all progressive legislation, basically from slavery times until the Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act in 1965. And then it loosened up a little bit, and those Dixiecrats went from the Democrats to the Republicans. But at least they didn't control all the committees and veto everything. So we made a little bit of progress, but now we're going backwards. It's a crisis. Emil Sachs asks, is any sustained public challenges to stealth privatization without people's consent possible? Will anyone try to turn to courts for help since neither major political party wants any social safety net at all?
Unfortunately, the courts are not going to save us because the courts are as conservative. So I don't see trying to go the court route as a way that's going to help us. Sustained public challenge. Yes, people need to, when you go to the doctor, if you're ask if your doctor is a member of any of these ACOs or direct contracting entities. National Single Payer, you can go to our, we have a Facebook page, we have a Twitter page, and you can go to our website and just nationalsinglepayer.org. You can go to, and we have listings of these private equity firms that are set up so far. Also, so does Physicians for National Health Program. And also there's a another site, I think it's protect.medicare.org, that has that also may list. I know PNHP lists, Physicians for National Health Program, lists some of these firms. And you can ask your doctor, does are you signed up with Clover Health or Oak Tree or so on? And and let your doctor know. I don't want to be put into that program automatically. I don't give consent. Be careful when you read, when you get letters, because these letters don't necessarily tell you what's going on. If you're a person about to go on Medicare, you may get a letter saying your doctor has decided to have you to put you into this organization. In the small print, down somewhere near the bottom, you can say, no, I don't want this. And I think if enough people say that's not what I want, we have, if you go to the sites I told you on the, we have phone numbers where you can just call to both CMMI is a department under CMS. You can call your congresspeople. And I think if there's a lot of people calling, say, we don't want this. We want to be, we do not want to be put into these private stealth privatization organizations without our consent. I think if there's enough fighting against it, you could make a difference.
Yeah, I would just add that the question kind of answers itself because it's a stealth privatization. Most people don't know that Medicare Advantage is privatizing your Medicare. And then there's another constituency, veterans. That's not even a national health insurance program. It's a national health service for veterans. And it is being privatized. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, getting the word out that they're basically taking public money and handing it over to Wall Street, who is going to keep money to have higher their profits and deny you care, is something that we need a lot of public education about. Because, you know, most people don't realize how they're being bamboozled. All they know is, you know, Jimmy Walker and Joe Namath on TV telling people to call this number. That's a hustle for Medicare Advantage. And it's all over the place. And, you know, people don't know how they're getting suckered into these things.
Yeah. And I just saw something else today saying that they're predicting that the premiums and the co-pays for all these insurance programs going up, going to be going up by 8.6% this next year. It's going to be, and so, and they're going up because these people need their profits. So people need to be aware. And I think if there were massive calls, I think it would make some dent if there were massive calls, massive email, massive text to all of, to your state and local, your state and national congressional leader, people, legislatures, both on the national level and state level, and that it would have some impact. And the reason why I think it would have some impact is we got people to do that around the direct contracting entities. Now, we didn't get rid of them, but they changed their names. It meant we had some impact. They changed their names from direct contracting to ACO Reach. That's ACO Reach is still, organizations are still direct contracting entities. And I think they thought we were stupid enough that we would be placated by changing the name. But that still shows we can have an impact.
Okay, this will probably be the last question because I know Claire has to go at 4. And I know we don't want to keep her. Maybe we have to have her back because I know we've got a lot of questions. But Leslie Bailey asked, do you think the hashtag Women's Health Project Action.
Health Protection Act will be added.
We'll be added to Medicare for All if the Democrats keep or gain a majority of the House and gain a majority of the Senate.
It might. I mean, we're certainly talking with some of the progressive Democrats about doing something like this. I think if there's enough public pressure, it could be, but it would have to be a lot of public pressure.
And the Women's Health Protection Act is about codifying Roe v. Wade mm-hmm. abortion rights.
Mm-hmm. So that's already effectively written into Jayapal's bill and Bernie Sanders' bill. So the problem is, would these bills pass?
Yeah, I'm skeptical the Democrats gaining a majority, they're going to pass it. There's no indication they will. I mean, we've got to challenge them, you know, with an independent political movement.
Yeah.
So that they might start moving if they fear they're going to lose elections to us.
Yeah, that's when they would do it. If they felt they were going to, that there was some political loss if they didn't do it.
Okay, Claire. Well, I appreciate you coming on and don't want to keep you because I know you have other things you've got to do. If we could get that Nation article in the chat, if it hasn't been posted, I haven't seen it. That's the article by, you know, David Himmelstein, Steffi Woolhandler, and the others that I think everybody should read. It's a good, concise summary of the argument that we got to go beyond national health insurance to a national health service.
Yeah. So, if I come back on, I'll be prepared with some of those articles. I had some family stuff going on, so it kind of, but if I come back on again, I'll bring a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay, good. Because I know you wrote something in the spring I was looking for and I wanted to put in the chat, but couldn't find it. So, okay. Well, this is a life or death issue, like I said, so it deserves more discussion. People have more questions. So let's come back to it. And I'll be in touch, Claire, because I want to find that article I couldn't find.
Sure.
And, you know, we'll get you on again and have more discussion about this important issue.
Sure.
And as for everybody else, thanks for being here today. We'll be here next week. Next week is just questions and answers. Unless Claire's open, maybe we can get right back into it. But we'll let people know in the social media. And so have a good week and thanks for being here. We got